read here, then this day is day. Like this here reminds me what I'm thinking of reading this. But we won't stick to this. Listen to Leonard Cohen. For those who come to nothing in the end, despite the promise and the long dark night. For those who drive their partners around the bend with tall talk of what could have been and still might. For those Everest climbers, the chosen few, who plant flags and photograph each other at that great height, and then wander home and wonder what to do, and snarl if a loved one asks them to please put out the light. For those, and here I count myself, whose scores of years have left the page pure white, for all the talk of what could have been, and still might, despite the promise and the long dark night. This poem called Listen to Leonard Cohen. It doesn't mention, doesn't talk to you as Leonard Cohen. I thought it was an apt title. I think I will become a monk, cell and bell and little punk, live a life of contemplation, walled away from all temptation. Spend my day with ink and quill that never have to pay a bill. Reject the flesh, the pub at night, and then perhaps I'd start to write. Anyway, I'll read a few. This is a poem called The Earth Circles the Sun. The day our teacher, in a gust of inspiration, called on O'Donnell to stand up at his desk in the middle of the room. Now boys, it's like this. O'Donnell there is the sun. Just look at his big head of red hair. We all laughed at Lanky O'Donnell, standing up in the middle of the room and his mad head of red hair. You, Heller, stand over there near the window. Your head is the earth. What is he, boys? The earth, sir, he sings on. Now, Gannon, you go over and stand beside Keller. Your head is the moon. What is he, boys? The moon, sir, he sings on again. This is the tricky bit now, lads. Gannon, you start walking in circles around Keller. Keller, you start pacing around the room. O'Donnell, you stay standing exactly where you are. And wipe that smirk off your face. Now, Keller, start turning slowly as you go. They made their way to the back wall, Keller walking and turning, then circling Keller, then across the room and up the other side. Now, boys, that's the solar system. The earth goes around the sun. The moon goes around the earth. Do ye understand? Yes, sir, he chorused. And how long will it take Kelleher to get back to the start? About 3 minutes. Freddy Glynn, giddy at the front desk. You're a fool, Glynn. What is he, boys? A fool, sir. Tell them, son. A year, sir, to circle the sun. O'Donnell's face, now red as his hair. He praised O'Donnell, explained about leap years, how given enough space he could set out all the planets, even as far as Pluto. Then Gannon fell over the rubbish basket and Keller fell over Gannon, and that was the end of the lesson. Keller today lives in New York City, a musician and a fine one too. Mike Gannon is in politics. Len has fingers in many pies and flies a helicopter, goes racing. Peter O'Donnell joined the army. And one day, on a tour of UN duty, his blue beret tucked under his arm when he stood up tall on the rampart to scan the dusty terrain. A sniper put a bullet in his head. His red hair an easy target. Even from a mile away, like the sun, it was said, against that perfect Lebanese sky. And the going is good. C7. Too old now for the open boat. On frosty days, anyway. We thought to go back as far as my plucker, Steve and myself, and drop a line, maybe try for some rockfish, hiding in the cracks at the foot of the cliff. The tide was big that morning, with a good gust up, so we sat back on a stone to see what the day would do. Steve saw it first, rising far out, its straining head and neck, a flowing white mane, its huge chest, its great round flanks, and a white tail curling high behind, as it charged headlong towards the shore. We knew straight away it was the sea stallion. Nearing the cliffs, he rose on his hind legs, and with one mighty leap peered a face, clattering down on the flag not 20 steps from where we stood, making the sign of the cross for what we had seen was not of this world. He steadied himself and headed off across the island. Not a word did we say to anyone. Who would have believed us anyway at our age? But when Paddy Dick found his mare to be a fool and couldn't explain it, we spoke up. I've not been over to the cliff since, and my sleep is often astray. This poem is called Visitors. If Bran was still alive, they would have been afraid to come in with the barking. And it was well that Mora is in heaven. Two big men, and a woman with them, would you believe? The light swung into the yard just as I was thinking of getting ready for bed. The tall fellow had a lump hammer, the other a rope. They were well geared up, all right. She was as bad. Found my old cutthroat by the sink. Threatened all sorts if I didn't say where I kept the bit of money. I haven't been back since. Can't face it. Came here straight from the hospital. It's full of old crocs. But it's all right. And I'm one now myself, I suppose. My hands never came right after the lump hammer. The surgeon did the best he could. I can manage a spoon, but not a cup. And Maura's lovely dinner, her dishes. The plates she always kept so nice on the dresser. Smashed to smithereens. No, I could never go in that door again. The priest comes once a week, says mass for us every Friday. He was talking to a guard. They paid another visit lately, below Clare. Same crowd by all accounts. Brave men. A widow woman this time living on her own. It's a cruel old world, I told the priest. He said it was. I tried to pass that off as a love poem. A reading around Valentine's, but I didn't get away with it. In fact, I was given out just currently, and I was told the next time you're reading a poem, read a right love poem and not be at that sort of all that other people trying to pass these things off as love poems. So I said I would. So I go on to now. So let me see now, something that was beyond argument or beyond metaphorical camouflage. Credo. And it's so obvious, I've even put in John Keats, beauty is truth, truth, beauty, as a tag of epigraph. Credo. Although I believe in nothing now, except the truth of your hand on my bare shoulder each and every blessed morning. It is more than enough. more than all the marble floors and vaulted domes of Christendom. For sure, the time will come when one of us will wake to loneliness, its cold breath filling a bedroom, fumble with buttons, all bearings melted, no more north and south. But that shriveled world is for another time. Tonight, a full and beautiful moon sits high in its crow's nest above the tattered rigging of the clouds. And there are stars, whole galaxies, the darkness of the universe, and the darkness beyond the universe. Dublin, here you all. This is a sonnet. Traffic streaming down from Parnell Square. Sunlight, pole dancing on the silver spire. Queer groups, full belts outside and summer store. Mysteries of tongues and night attire. This autumn afternoon, a city stroll. Strange luxury of nothing much to do. The romance of the bustling Moor Street stalls, fruits, cut flowers, but not the place we knew when years ago, defined the oracle. We bought your diamond ring not far from here. In photographs, my God, we are so young. But now we kiss and know we've come full circle. The same vendors cry, flowers for your lady dear, red apples, yes. And white chrysanthemums. Tight squeeze. This is for my friends from Limerick here. Bertha and Archie. Whom I actually did meet in Paris. What I most remember about our week together in Paris is not the pale fresco we stared at in the Louvre, or the name of the artist, was he from the Spanish or the Flemish school, who painted that famous bowl of shiny fruit. Even now, I can't recall which king built the splendid pavilions around the shady garden where we sheltered one scorching afternoon. Was it Richelieu or Sully, who, according to the mumbling guide, lived in the nearby mansion with the ceilings remarkably restored? I will probably forget the bustling square with the four atop trees and the restaurant where we had dinner 3 nights in a row. The handsome waiter had been caught your fancy. Eventually, I get over the size of the Edition for 2 drinks in that well-known cafe on the corner. Its name escapes me at the moment. What I know will remain, however, is the tight squeeze in the tiny two-person elevator and those giddy acts of passion snatched between our fifth-floor apartment and ground before stepping out like adults onto the sunny boulevard laid out by Baron Houseman, the date of which is on the tip of my tongue. Scene. You know the bar scene where Miss Hottie arrives into a room full of half-drunk, unshaven deadbeats, wriggling her jailbait cleavage and tight jean ass to jukebox music. She chalks a cue and then bends over the pool table, sinking the impossible shot to stun silence from the sweaty men, all strung out on whiskey and loneliness, their wolverine eyes ravishing every sweet inch of her. The 2 or 3 aging and wasted females sprawled in corners are not at all pleased. And the tattooed barman polishing a tongue watches from under heavy eyelids, waiting for the first hint of rumble. The beery redneck decides to make his awkward move, but stumbles into the 2 long-haired weirdo types, and the first punch gets thrown, just as Miss Hottie is about to be hauled into a back room. A figure on a motorcycle drives straight through and the swing door, spins by the counter, yells at her to climb aboard, and they're screaming down the highway before the frozen bedroom. Sorry, bar room. Freudian slip there. before the frozen Pharaoh begins to thaw. So where do we fit into this scene? Are you the maiden in distress, or the cool rider to the rescue? Everybody wants to be the cool rider to the rescue. But who wants to be the redneck, or the long-haired weirdo, or the lust-crazed drinker with the weakest stomach? Occasionally someone accepts the role of the giant tattooed barman, but nobody ever wants to be the wasted aging female. No, never the aging female. Everybody wants to be Miss Hottie or the motorcyclist. Just for tonight, you can be Miss Hottie. And I will be the cool rider to the rescue. Tomorrow we will resume our usual roles, but it gets tiresome being the one with the megaphone, always having to call, cut. I read one or two more, let me see now. This is the poem from Something Like Lovers that won the Brendan Kennedy Award a few years back. And I had a great weekend down in his hometown of Ballylongford, spending the prize money, which I managed to do. It's a long poem. I was just talking to Paul here about long poems, and my definition of a long poem is one that gets into the second page. So we had a slight disagreement about that. We settled on the explanation being the font size. Now this is a long poem for me, so how am I doing? Not too bad on time. Okay. It's called Embers. It's set in Ireland and in Italy, and it's set in a town, a ruin called Ostia. Everybody goes to Italy and they see Pompeii, yeah, and they say, "Oh, this is fantastic, look at this." But about a half an hour on a train towards the coast out of Rome, there is the ancient port of Ostia. It was covered not by volcano stuff, but by sediment washed down on the river for 1,000 years, maybe 1,500 years, but it was excavated in the 1930s, and it's still being excavated, and it's a fantastic place to walk around. It's like Mallow would say, every house is about 3 foot high, and you can walk from the fish shop into the pub, into the laundry. How do you know these things? Because the mosaics are on the floor. The fish shop is the fish, you know yourself. And but it's a great center for the Mithras religion, which just for the look of the flick of a coin would have been the main religion of the empire and not Christianity, so we'd be all going around killing bulls and doing things which would be a lot more creative than what we are doing. Ostia, yeah. So there's a bit of creation within here, and basically it's a couple struggling, right? You get love poems and you get, "Well, my heart is broken" poems, but this is a poem that slots into the middle here. And the imagery jumps around between myth and place and past and present in Italy and Ireland. It's a bit hard to follow, but I won the Brendan Kennedy with it, so I won't say it's crap. Embers. Basically, it's a relationship under attack. One little thing, the scorpion in Mithras is the killer of life, yes. The scorpion is the killer of love, and therefore the killer of life. And it's a relationship here, being attacked by a scorpion. So, Embers. When Apollo ordered Mithras to sacrifice a bull, he carried out the task unwillingly. Mosaics depict his face averted. As the bull died, the animal became the moon. Mithras mantled the starry sky. From the bull's blood, the first corn sprouted, the first purple grapes. Every other thing sprang from his seed except the scorpion. The scorpion drinks deed and blood. Their days are passed in silences or set pieces, coming and going, holding out as best they can, retreating into props and costumes and south-facing rooms, ignoring the fact that no one ever calls. And still they make love, more in hope than passion, like two castaways, keeping the signal fire burning on the off chance, taking turns to fan the embers to straighten the help sign built with white stones on the beach. Each night the great breakers roll in to wipe away the footprints, now his, now hers. The old cartographers were right. It is possible to drop off the edge of the world, and monsters of the deep exist exactly where the ancient charts place them. Spires of pine trees, medieval, here and there on the amber hillside. Silence not yet shattered by the traffic of the Strada Aurelia. She sleeps little in this high-ceilinged room, her fears rustling like night creatures in the wood, the air already dry as dead leaves. Yesterday, a man in the gift shop smiled, but it was not a stranger's smile she wanted, no, not his, not his. A great bird, a hawk maybe, rises broad-winged and circles, white petals curl on the veranda, pearl shells loose from the patterned wall. On the bedside table, near his sleeping head, the door sign, in bold lettering, "Do not disturb." Where the ancient river winds through the scorched earth of Campania, it's hard to know east from west. A lizard, throat pulsing in the heat, clings to a rock, waits, listens, then slithers for his dusty crevice. She remains in the piazza while he climbs the stairs to the basilica's great dome. Higher, higher, slowly winding a hymn, a chant, "Perhaps it's not too late, my love, perhaps it's not too late." Then the city spreads before him, the curving colonnades of St. Peter's, elliptical, like a claw. He sees her far below among the wandering tourists, standing near the fountain, tiny, unmistakable. He wants to call out. The sky is marble blue and beautiful. They have a right to come. But she moves, crossing by Nero's obelisk, its shadow long and black across the square, a tail, its sharp point, the sting. They arrived at the ruins of Ostia. He thumbs the guidebook in the shade, cap pulled low against the blaze of white sunlight. She prowls the edges, making her own way through empty courtyards, the tilt and stagger of columns, to the still of the amphitheater where she sits, knees drawn up, watching three wild cats move away over the steps like wishes softly rebuffed. In the cool of Mitra's temple, the share Casarecchio bread and Chianti, splashing wine into plastic cups, red droplets falling on the mosaic floor, on the scorpion and across the bowl, his neck stretched for the blade. By the Via Ostiense, they sit apart in deepening shadow. Down this ancient road, an empire marched. No clang of legions now, no throb of seed and blood, just the dry crackle of their plastic cups. Then faint, through the ages and the glittering twilight, drawn perhaps by their dismay, their defeat, come faded sounds, a woman sobbing, the door being nailed and shuttered, the last bundled cart creaking up the road for Rome. So that's the poem Embers. Yeah. So I read two short poems to finish out, and I leave it at that. That's great. Okay. This is a book called Blink. Blink. Gold floor, it has. Wooden building blocks, then school, you cry, exams, you slam some doors, by a rusting clock. Girls' lovely ties. I do. A kid. Then three. The job goes well. A house with grass. Hobbies. A week or two abroad. Your daughter falls in love. The sun implodes. Grandchildren hug your neck. A cat. Plastic building blocks. The doctor shakes his head. You. That's what it's called, being. Yeah. It's a bit like that, unfortunately. I'm sorry to say. And the last poem I read is the very last poem in the book that Grattan wrote. And I was doing a reading a few months ago, and a person said to me, "I'm glad you read that poem, because I tried to read that poem and I couldn't make head or tail of it. I thought it was the worst poem I ever read." And but now I understand it. So I didn't know what to say to that except thanks. And I'm glad I read it. It's called Seeker's Lullaby. As you know, a lullaby puts children to sleep, but this is more about the greater sleep. So Seeker's Lullaby. No sign. No sign at all. Not in the tipping sky, puffy, puffy. Look at the shelter. Down by the black rocks, splashy, splashy. No sign there. Nor along the shore. Brown weed rotting. And the sand flies hoppy, hoppy. All the way to the village, the baker. His dog in the backyard. Not there. Not there. Across to the butcher. Choppy, choppy. Mince and pudding to the cafe. Surely in the cafe. Empty, empty. Chessboard floor, king, pawn, knight, queen. Climb the hill, climbing, climbing. See all about, seek all around. No sign at all. Headstones warming in the sun. The warm sun shining, shining. Growing tired, growing sleepy. Lie down, rest. Lie down, here. Let the grass grow over, growing, growing. Little roots, earth tendrils, toe holes crawling, crawling. No sign, no sign at all. In the rain softening, the wind rises, the flake melting, the bolt angry, the clouds darkening, rumble, rumble. The grass growing over. No sign, nothing. Sleep now, the clay softening. Only sleep, nothing else. Nothing. Nothing at all. So, thank you very much.